It is Monday, June 22nd, and this is Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined today by both Tim Priester and Drew Bentock of Irish Illustrated. Guys, it was a big official visit weekend for Notre Dame, and we actually expect a legacy recruit. It would be a shock if Julius Jones Jr. does not ink Irish, or not ink Irish, pledge Irish today in his announcement. But according to 24/7 Sports' Tom Loy, Notre Dame could be getting quarterback Trey Tagliaferri as well. And a nice surprise would be if, following that, Sagoon Alexander, which would be a bit of a cherry on top in recent recruiting efforts, Tim Priester.
Yeah, Tagliaferri in the class of 2028, correct, from Bergen Catholic. So that's off into the distance. But, I like the way he throws the football. The ball comes off his hand really, really nicely. And Sagoon Alexander is like, I looked at Braden Parks and said, they have to have him, and you'd love to have him as well. But Sagoon Alexander is a hell of a interior defensive lineman as well. So, I mean, that the magnitude of their recruiting along the defensive line is just like Notre Dame fans have to be taken aback a little bit, the level that it's at, but it's fantastic. And, I still think Braden Parks is a better fit for Notre Dame. I think the family believes that as well, and they want him to stay close to home, but we'll see what happens. But Julius Jones, the second, should end up in Notre Dame's count with the class of 2027.
Very quickly, Tim, you mean he's a better fit for Notre Dame than for Oregon, or you think he's a better fit for Notre Dame?
He's a better fit in Oregon than Oregon. He's a Chicago kid.
Not Sagoon Alexander, but a better fit.
No. Yes. Thank you for clarifying. And I've mentioned before that I have a brother that lives out in Eugene, Oregon, and it's wonderful, but the lifestyle is so different from what what Parks would encounter in Chicago. They could be a bit of a culture shock. And it sounded like, everything with his visit this weekend was fun. So we'll see if he chooses hard or not.
Yeah, and I think he's somebody who's been enamored, as Eric Thomas has talked about a lot too, with Oregon. So we'll see if maybe after the visit fades, if that's something Notre Dame can still get involved with Parks. But with Alexander too, it's worth noting he was a 2028 player and he reclassified, I think, in April. So I think before he reclassified, he's a 3-star now, but he was like the number 186 overall player before reclassifying. And he's also, I think, up to like 295, according to Tom Loy. So he's bigger than maybe what you would see on his 24/7 Sports profile. And he'd be at least the third reclassified guy in this class. So Notre Dame, despite some of their academics requirements, seem to be doing pretty well with those guys. But yeah, Julius Jones Jr. is a guy who, if we're talking about potentially losing Parks to Oregon, Notre Dame, I think Jones was pretty enamored with them as well a few months ago, and he didn't even go on his official visit. So Notre Dame isn't losing all of those battles with the Ducks right now.
I'm going to have it explained to me like I'm a 5-year-old, Tim Priester, how people can reclassify and all of a sudden get into Notre Dame after all the trouble everybody had for 100 years of football getting into Notre Dame.
Let's see, 2026, NIL, college football exploding. I think you add all those things in there and that's how it all comes about.
Now I feel like a 5-year-old. Good. You made it very simple. honestly, if they follow through this, Alexander alone, but Alexander and Parks together, which is seems crazy, but it's not. We like spending Notre Dame's money. I will stop bringing up the Lynch to it.
Yeah, I mean, it blows it out of the water.
Yeah, it blows it out of the water. I mean, I keep saying those guys because we know what happened to Ishaq Williams. But Ishaq Williams was higher rated than all these guys. So it's not like, where you're looking at recruiting, but it blows it out of the water because the interior, the recruiting of the defensive interior, Tim, was the last frontier for Notre Dame. Like they developed good undervalued Mills wasn't undervalued. Other than Riley Mills, they just developed good undervalued defensive linemen under Al Washington, under the previous regime. They did a good job, but they weren't. If you can develop 5-stars as opposed to hitting on Howard Cross all guys like that all the time, that's what the key is.
Well, in the last two cycles, they brought in 2 defensive tackle transfers in each one of them. So,
yeah,
the last frontier. Yeah, it's incredible. I'm not going to believe a Parks Alexander combination till I see it because that's beyond too good to be true with everything, with all the other commitments at defensive end. But, they're right there. It certainly can happen, and you'd love to see it because it gives them so many options moving forward.
Tom Loy, and actually this is Eric Thomas, also updated Albert Simeon from his official visit. No negative update, but down the road. Now, Albert Simeon's a guy, Tim, that you love to be bringing to this class.
Well, I just, you know, he plays tackle, but I think he's a guard.
I think he would be a tremendous guard. Like, we want to take away the equivocation that that's a down thing. Yeah. There's a downside. You can have great guards too. Yeah.
Well, he's going to have to learn to bend better. Certainly when he moves in, if he moves inside, you have to learn to bend better, but he's athletic enough to do it. It's just, you know, it's just muscle memory and committing yourself to being a knee bender, you know, and he's capable of doing that, but a great athlete. I agree, Tim, I think would be an outstanding offensive guard.
And I think you're good with him also playing guard when you already have two top 100 offensive tackles in the class too. So it's definitely a luxury they potentially could have if they able to get him.
And then we'd have to use our favorite, one of our favorite interviews and our favorite people, Mike McGlinchey. We're all tackles until we get to Notre Dame. Then they decide where to put us. But he got to stay.
Well, and Rudolph, and you know, Joe Rudolph will move you anywhere along the offensive line. So that versatility is important.
It's a funny quote from McGlinchey too, when he's 6'8" and the only one who knows he's never getting moved to guard.
He was not going
to
get moved. No. You know, I mean, Zach Martin might have been if he joined a healthier program.
Oh, moved
to guard. I mean, he is a Hall of Fame guard, so it would not have been a terrible call. But they clearly needed him at tackle in those days. But I bet he would have been moved to guard and probably been a two-time All-American guard had he joined Notre Dame in the halcyon days as opposed to the crossover. Tim Priester, before we get to, speaking of offensive linemen, before we get to your first-rate conversation of offensive linemen, I wanted to give you and Drew a chance because there's a bracket. So that means Tim Priester's watching. Oh, there was a College World Series and the World Cup. I wanted to give you guys both a chance to talk about a bracket. There's a bracket out there. I love that quote. That's one of your best quotes, though.
I do. I love anything you can put in a bracket. And it's a little bit different World Cup because you have the group stage first, and then you really incorporate the bracket into it. So I've got it right here, and I've really enjoyed it. I you know, I'm by no means a soccer aficionado, but if you've seen the United States play, especially in their first game, but even in their second game, that's the best that our country has ever been represented on a soccer field in a World Cup setting. They are, you know, I credit the coach a lot with that, but that the ball's on a string with those guys, and it's like, you know, it's like they have magnets on them. It's just from one guy to the next, the ability to pass the ball is tremendous, and they've played really great soccer up to this point. So looking forward to it. I don't know, you know, does it come to an end when you start running into Spain and France? France hasn't really played well yet. I don't know that Portugal's played well yet either. Argentina's there. I think England's a threat as well, but really enjoy it. And yes, anything that's bracketable is I'm all in on.
I watched the first half of the U.S. game. I enjoyed it. This is probably controversial. Maybe I shouldn't say it, but as fun as it is to kind of root for the USA, I don't really ever want our best athletes to start playing soccer. And if they did really well on U.S. soil this year, maybe that starts changing in this country. So there is part of me that cheers for them with a little bit of trepidation and maybe holds back a little bit. Every time they score a goal, I'm like, yay, but don't do too well either. So I don't know. I feel weird about it.
That is selfish. We need Pete Sampson on this podcast to push back against Drew Mentok. You are actually doing a much cleaner Bill Burr bit right now, by the way, about Americans athletes if they wanted to go play soccer. Because
everything's got to be cleaner than what Bill Burr's throwing out there.
No surprise, Priester, but in first rate, Notre Dame comes in first along the offensive line. I was surprised, however, to see the Miami Hurricanes drop below a number three on this. So I think that might be our first talking point because obviously losses to the NFL. It's different when it's graduation. Losses to the NFL for Miami impacted that ranking.
Well, a consensus All-American and first-round draft choice at the top of it, the right tackle. Yeah, I mean, as I would with Notre Dame because of where they are in college football world these days, okay, where can I slot Miami? They lost all but one of their starting offensive linemen. They did not, you know, the transfer portal they use for skill position athletes on offense, not offensive linemen. They're pretty much counting on the guys that were already in the program. And so, you know, they've got, one of the top rated offensive tackles in the class of 2026. It'll probably start at left tackle. So I where can I slot them at? Where is the drop off enough between the upper echelon and the next group to slot them? And I had Notre Dame first and SMU second, because I think SMU has a potential all ACC guy at center, at guard, and at tackle. So I think that they fit there. BYU, I love their center, Bruce Mitchell. He's probably the best center on Notre Dame's schedule. Then I slotted Miami in there. And then after that, I mean, I'm kind of bullish on Michigan State because of the way they've gone about reconstructing their offensive lines. And plus, I know I'm not supposed to do this because then I'm crossing over with positions, but I love Cam Edwards, the running back that transferred from UConn. So I think he can accentuate the skills of their offensive line a little bit better than maybe some other running back. So that was my top five. I think Stanford's better. Navy is, you know, Navy's good. The collective is always better than the individual. So I have Navy in the middle of the pack, and then Wisconsin, then it, you know, then it really drops off. Like pretty much every position, the other three positions that I've looked at up to this point, it's the haves and the have nots. And, yeah, and, you know, Notre Dame definitely belongs. We can talk about them. You know, they lost Shrouth and Wagner, you know, a bunch of starts there. You got two guys switching positions. They have so much offensive line talent that it's not even really close for an evaluation like this.
I think reading the story too, and also listening to Bud Elliott's summer school in Miami, it does make me think this would have been a really good year to have Miami in game one, just because you have guys like Jackson Cantwell, other guys working in that. If you would have gotten to see them earlier with Notre Dame's defensive line, that probably could have been maybe closer to more of a reverse of what we saw last year. Whereas giving those guys a chance to get their feet wet for the first 2 months of the season, they'll play at Clemson, so they'll have some road environment before they come to South Bend. But not saying that that's terrible for Notre Dame, but I just think, man, if that was reversed, this is a year, whereas with a Mario Cristobal coach team, that offensive line will probably be playing much better in November than they were at the start of the year.
You know what's interesting? I always think that's a great point, Drew, and people made it last year too. I always thought to myself, well, Miami has to play Notre Dame at the beginning of the year too. But it's absolutely true that Notre Dame would have fared so much better against Miami in week five than they did. And you know what? That's what the team that loses says. I completely get that. But it's one of the rare cases where, like, man, it was just something about Miami at that point in the season. Look what happened to Miami in the middle of that season. You're going to focus more on Notre Dame coming in than you are playing SMU and Louisville. But the difference was astounding. That's where the returning coordinators, returning quarterback, and all of that comes into play. Priester, very quickly, you mentioned the losses. I mean, I think Kirby Lambert can be better this year than Emil Wagner was at Notre Dame.
Yeah,
he would love to have back. He would start immediately if Billy Schrapp came back.
Bigger, stronger, more physical. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a guy that you can run behind. Whereas with Wagner, Wagner's just kind of holding the point of attack, and he did it extremely well. You know, he was durable for two seasons in a row, which is, you can't, with what has happened in Notre Dame's offensive line injury wise the last few years, you can't take that for granted. That was very key.
Related question to the first rate series before we move on to segment two from Brokeback Brian, one of my favorite Twitter guys. I can do math and I'm a football fan. Put those two things together and I don't think Notre Dame and or Miami are getting many threes, certainly fours, in Priester's annual series. The Miami did get a four today. Does this mean they'll be the two highest ranked teams in the 15 or 16 years he's done this?
Did you look that up, Tim?
I haven't officially looked. I know the number one ranked team every year, and the number one of all time was great. Clemson in 2020. We're not going to say the number two because it wasn't as good. But if you're a longtime listener, you can figure it out from 2024. But I think that Clemson team, I think it was almost across the board once. Because I don't think you might have given Notre Dame 2020 offensive line. We knew they were going to be a great offensive line. They could have been number one there, but they would not have been number one at any other position on offense.
No.
Michael Mayer, not yet. You know, that would have been a not yet. They lost Cole Komet, so they would not have been number one. They are defensively, they certainly weren't going to be number one over, would they have been number one over Clemson anywhere? I don't think so on that defense. Not preseason is what we're looking at here.
Yeah.
Kyle Hamilton might have helped the secondary, but I feel like Clemson also used to have secondary players that. So I think Clemson is the best one you've ever ranked. I don't think Notre Dame would get to that status, but I bet you Notre Dame and Miami, you say you did this for 15 years, you would figure only one of them could be in the top 15. Both, two of them will be in the top 15.
Yeah.
Is the same.
You know, Notre Dame, Miami, and the defense is a little bit different because Notre Dame's opponents coming up were awful offensively last year. I mean, they were awful.
Yeah.
They're probably going to be better because there's some quarterbacks that have come in that transferred in that will help. But it's on the defensive side of the ball where several of Notre Dame's opponents did some pretty good things. Not all the time, and certainly not across the board, because it is a schedule that's very favorable to Notre Dame. But as we get into the defensive part, some of these numbers will even out a little bit. Mm-hmm. Probably not, but not with Notre Dame.
Not with Notre Dame, though. That's what I was thinking. The defense is 1-1-1, won't they be?
I don't look ahead. I don't really know where I am, because there's so much to go through with the next group. But I can't. It's certainly no. There's no
two
way.
There's two number ones. Even without looking, like linebacker and defensive backs are going to be number one. You would have to do a deeper dive on the line.
Well, and when Miami has a good defensive line.
So they do. Like, they
have some good guys coming.
And they hit the transfer portal there, Wilson from Missouri will be one of the next guys that I'm looking at. But the two defensive ends that they lost to the NFL, I mean, those guys were outstanding. So yeah, I hate to give it away, but I mean, I think it's probably going to be 1-1-1 for defensive line, linebackers, and secondary.
Fun question, though. I'm glad he asked that. That's a nice, relatable question for first rate. But Notre Dame, I think Notre Dame will be one of the highest. I don't know if they'll beat Clemson. We'll be back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question from a omitted name here, guys. So I'm just going to make one up. So it's Irish Envy 2027. There you go. Now, I made that name up. Irish Illustrated reports that Juwan Sider likes using two running backs. Even if that holds, do you think it will be the same two backs throughout the season, or will we see more depth chart ebbs and flows at running back? He had a few examples, guys, of how Notre Dame has used its running backs. I just think they were all under a different position coach, so that's the crux.
What do you think about that, Drew?
I think there's more likelihood that there's a little more ebbs and flows throughout the season than last year. I mean, you're not replacing two. You don't have two first round picks at running back, so and I think you can maybe mix them up a little bit, and there's always injuries and stuff like that. So I think I'll be curious to see how Sider does it when he doesn't have a room full of guaranteed future NFL players, which is what he had at Penn State when he really implemented that too. But I still think that's what he likes to do, and I still think that, only three guys really got a lot of reps this spring too, so we still need to see more from that running back room. But I do think, just because Nolan and Williams kind of have very similar styles, that maybe mixing in a Walton or something like that occasionally could be something that they try.
I just, knowing how Sider likes to do it, and then, Aeneas Williams and Nolan James Jr. clearly step forward for them in Notre Dame's mind this spring. So unless there are injuries to one of those two, I don't necessarily think that there will be a lot of ebbs and flows. Now, we haven't seen Javion Osborne. It's Javion, by the way, pronunciation. We haven't seen him because of the injury in the spring. So, I mean, I guess that opens up a possibility there. But I just wouldn't. I think everybody in the organization, especially on the offensive side of the ball, talks, Williams and James and Williams. And I'm not sure that that's going to alter a whole lot unless somebody gets banged up along the way.
I think the key is two guys can emerge early, and he wants to use those two. But if somebody plays well enough and carves a niche, he would go with it, because you guys have both made this point. It's not Love and Price you're taking out. What was my joke all the time to Mike Bray about Bonzi Colson? Why didn't you play him? Well, I had a rotation. Yeah, you weren't taking out Scottie Pippen. You could have put in Bonzi Colson. So, we're right once every 20 years over a coach. And that was one of those situations. I think if Osborne or Walton flashes, they'll just get some reps. I just think Sider likes to go into game week prep with two running backs. I don't think he means I can't use a third running back this year, or the third running back can't beat out my second running back. What if James isn't quite as effective as they think? It's a weird word to use, because he's effective, but maybe he's not dynamic enough for the offense.
Yeah, perhaps. Now, okay, so if that happens, yes, but they don't give us any indication.
No, they don't.
That they think that's going to happen. They have been solid in their promotion of those two. So, we've said this a couple times. We saw in the Jersey scrimmage some of that hovering above the ground that Mike Denbrock talks about with Nolan James Jr. And I think that they're pretty sold on those two. And unless there's an injury situation, I think those will be the top two guys.
Our next question is from Frank and Kyle. Who is the most deserving Notre Dame player to never win a championship, college or NFL? It could be based on the individual talent, being on talented teams that couldn't finish the job, or just for being a great person. As a Vikings fan, I'll add someone that fits all of these, Harrison Smith. And Jack Freeman's vote would be Harrison Smith as well, I believe, off camera. He's nodding his head. Yes.
Well, I love Harry Smith, too. His teammates always called him Harry. I always found that amusing. Tim Brown didn't. Yeah. Tim Brown didn't win.
Tim Brown's the answer.
Yeah, that's who I wrote down, too.
Well, he had 1,094 receptions, 14,934 yards receiving, 100 touchdown receptions, and 4 returns for touchdowns. Tim Brown. I stopped there. I didn't think I needed to go any further.
Got it right. Yeah, it would be Tim Brown.
Yeah.
He just won in, didn't win the NFL, but famously, of course, the Vikings didn't win the NFL in that era. But Tim Brown's pretty good call.
Yeah, I think, and he did it in the pros for so long too. I mean, he's a 2-time All-Pro, 9-time Pro Bowler, and I think he was an All-Pro early in his career, and then led the NFL in receptions almost a decade later too. So he was a really good player in the NFL, and just I think narrowly missed it with the Raiders in 2002 as well. But and then obviously just missed being a national championship team the year after he won the Heisman. So he was
one of those guys that sets the table for the next group. You, Tim, you've coached teams, and I've coached high school teams where classes bring you up to the brink and don't make it, and then the next one breaks through.
And, of course, Page won at Notre Dame, but that's Alan Page would be maybe the next best pro, along with Tim Brown, or maybe tied for Tim Brown. I'm going to speak out just because I love the guy but don't like the team. I don't think Zach Martin will win one. He will join this list. Did Joe Montana win one? You guys remember? Sorry about that. Yeah, that was good. Ricky Waters won one too, by the way, if you're wondering out there, for anybody paying attention. Should have never left. He could have won a lot more.
I think it's our Pages this other than Montana. I mean, he won an MVP as a defensive player, so I think we got to give him the nod right after. Yeah. Our next question is from Brokeback Brian. Has there been a good Notre Dame team you did not enjoy covering and or watching? Or maybe just one that you found ultimately disappointing. In other words, 2007 and 2016 and the Faust era aren't viable answers.
I like that he made sure he didn't say by the Faust era there, Priester. Because there had to be a team then. You're just like, oh gosh, this is.
Well, you knew, you knew year after year it wasn't going to get better.
Good teams that were not as fun to cover were. The best one that wasn't as fun to cover, I think, was probably that 2019 11-2 team where. They're sandwiched by really good 2018, really good 2020, and you just knew they weren't quite good enough. They almost upset Georgia. They were about like a 16-point underdog. Remember that? That's they ruined the whole year with the Michigan game. It just ruined November, even though they went 5-0 and bounced back. It just made that month. And he had
because it wasn't even close.
No, right. And it was a return to that was the Camping World Bowl. It wasn't even called a good bowl then. 19 is my vote there. Before I covered the team, 06 was a huge letdown from 05 for me. The fun of 05, I don't know when it could be matched because it was so much different than what people had seen from the previous 4 years. It was so fun. The offense was just, it was a revelation. All of a sudden, you're like, oh my God, they're great on offense with all these cool players. And then it was just, I just don't care anymore.
Yeah. Some of the bad teams, those are easy to pick out. Yeah. And we've talked about this too. The 1992 team that tied Michigan and they were up 16-0 against Stanford. They were up 16-6 at halftime. They didn't score the second half and
they got killed.
They got killed. Actually, I'm gonna reference this here a little bit later, but yeah, they did. And you know, that was disappointing because you beat number 9 Boston College, you beat number 22 Penn State, you beat number 19 USC, and you beat number 4 Texas A&M and hammered them in the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, they were a great team at one point.
I always felt like, you know, that was how far into my, you know, I was about 10 years into my career at that point. I always felt like that was when that season ended, again, I've said this many times, when that season ended, I thought this is a team that could have won the national title and they let it slip away early.
It wasn't like I didn't strongly dislike covering the 2023 team, but and they won 10 games. But I think because of the quarterback at times, I understand why his answers were obviously very gracious, always crediting his teammates and stuff. But sometimes it came across as a little disingenuous. And there are times where I felt like we'd all asked very pertinent questions about his development or how we saw things. And he kind of used that to never answer. And I think that kind of throughout the season made it at times harder to cover the team and get some of the insights from a player who I understand why he was a fan favorite and why he did things. But in terms of press conferences and interviews, I think that made it harder at times to get the responses you wanted from the guy who was kind of the face of the team right then.
Well, and you hear some things about how the Clemson game transpired. And yeah, I don't know that. I mean, I think at a certain point there were some questions whether he was both feet in, and that's disappointing.
Yeah. For the Freeman era, that would be of the 4-year Freeman era. That's the choice. I know Pete and I've always talked about the year after 2012, the 2013, they shouldn't even call it the 2013. It should be the year after 2012. It's the most nondescript thing you can find in the world. Just think, there was just, it ended in the Pinstripe Bowl with the greatest text ever from Tim Priester when he was there a day earlier than everybody else. And along the way, it was just 2-1, 3-2, lose at Pitt, 4 losses going into November. Like, it just, the whole climb, there was no crescendo other than the fun win in Jerry World. That was kind of the real fun win, a little bit of against Arizona State and for the Shamrock Series. It was just kind of not there. And if people are wondering, Tim Priester took a picture of the Pinstripe Bowl trophy and texted me, "This is what it's all about." Still one of the funniest
things. There aren't too many bowl games that you go to where there's a snowstorm while you're visiting New York City.
That's true.
I mean, there are bowl trips. And I actually, you know, we had a great time. We had a great time there.
Yeah, you're in New York, so it was fun. Yeah. But fittingly, our bus was hit by a car and we had to sit there after. That fit perfectly.
Question number 4 from Kay Beasley. Happy Julius Jones Day, which likely means you are recording while he announced. We haven't heard that yet, but that can happen at any time.
He will beat it.
Kay Beasley says, it got me thinking, who do you think the biggest legacy kids miss may have been, or sibling of an Irish kid, such as Anthony Barr, Sonny Styles, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tommy Eichenberg?
Go ahead, Drew, but my answer, he nailed my answer in here.
Yeah, I mean, I think Anthony Barr is an interesting one. I'm going to go with St. Brown just because, I mean, he would have been on those 2018, 19, and 20 teams. And as much as I like Chris Fink, if you're putting him in the slot, he had 1,000 yards as a sophomore, and then his junior year is a little different because I think they only played like 6 games in the Pac-12. But, I mean, just his compete level, everything we saw. I'm not saying they beat Clemson or Alabama in 2018 or 2020, but just adding that guy to that room. And I know he didn't commit because he didn't want the previous quarterback to be throwing to him, which I understood. But then Ian Book probably would have been a much better option for those short passes and what he could do in the slot too. So I just think in terms of what he could have added to some really good Notre Dame teams, he could have really pushed them to maybe another level.
I mean, he's my answer because I love the dude's compete level. It's him. It's, I think people know Amon-Ra St. Brown and Robert Woods are the two USC guys I like because they competed so hard. I would take those two on any Notre Dame team ever at any point, no matter how good the receivers were. I wonder if Sonny Styles is the choice. Would Notre Dame have won? Just put Sonny Styles off of Ohio State's team and stick him on Notre Dame in that game. I think they might. So he might have to be the strategic choice, if not the just as a fan, I like watching Amon-Ra St. Brown kill people choice.
Tim, you remember who the receiver that I liked on that USC core? I wasn't talking about St. Brown. I was talking about this other guy leading up to it.
Tyler Vaughns. That's right. He like Mekhi Lemon before he took off. You have good USC scouting abilities. How are they looking this year, Tim? You got anything on them this year?
It's funny how you, like, you know, as you're going through stats looking for opponents, you see USC. Nope, I don't have to stop at that one. I'll just slide by that one. But Tyler Vaughns was long and lean and athletic. And I did he ever play in the NFL? I don't know that he did. I thought he was better than, and to your credit, I probably underrated Amon-Ra St. Brown a little bit at that point. And obviously he's a pretty spectacular NFL player now.
He went undrafted and now he's in the XFL or whatever it's called that's where he played most recently.
Well, he's still playing. I thought he was a really, really good college receiver.
There's a lot of good receivers out there. That's what we found out over the years.
Michael Pittman, Drake London. Those were teammates.
Yeah, the Hate the Drake headline, one of my favorites at Irish Illustrated. Our next question is from Bobby1556. On Thursday's podcast, it was mentioned that while Notre Dame has a much improved receiving room, there is no true number one threat. But going back to spring ball, I do remember most of you raving about Mylon Graham and how he just looks and moves different than those compared to the rest of the bunch. Do you guys not see him as a number one?
No, I think he could be. He's got the skill set to do it. He just doesn't. we haven't seen enough of a body of work in game situations, and all we've seen of him is practice. But I mean, it's a legit question, and I do think that he has the skill set to be that. I think that's Jordan Faison until proven otherwise. But Mylon Graham can do that. Devin Fitzgerald may be able to do that in years to come. He would probably be, as much as we like most of those freshman receivers that came in, if you had to pick one that you say is going to be a number one in the future coming out of the spring with the few things that we saw from Devin Fitzgerald, you'd probably place him first among guys that would be candidates for that.
Yeah, I'm definitely on the phasing bandwagon, but I agree with Graham. Like, for as talented as he is, and there's obviously good reasons why he wouldn't have played at Ohio State much up to this point or previously, but we still haven't just seen much from him on the field. And for as good as he looks and as different as he looks, it's still different seeing it on Saturdays. And maybe a few weeks into the season, we'll see him a little differently. But I agree, he has that potential. I mean, he was a top 50 or so prospect coming out of high school for a reason.
It's hard to rank guys that haven't done anything as a true number one. But we have Mylon Graham in 2 years. We might be saying, best thing for Notre Dame is if we're hitting November and you're like, man, I guess we missed on that, because either Mylon Graham or Jordan Faison could be 1A, 1B, number one receiver on this team. But those are the – I would not go past those two, though.
Well, we didn't get to see Quincy Porter. Right. Maybe. I don't know. I don't like to – none of us like to pass judgment until we see him actually in person.
Yeah. I think that's the – and we won't see – probably won't see enough of him in person until September, is just the way it works.
Our next question is from ND Mark. Tims, what's your experience in a Notre Dame game that was off the radar and was precipitous of things to come? Mine was 1982 Notre Dame versus Florida State. Rowan Stark was awesome. Never saw a ball kick so high. Let's try one Notre Dame player, but most important, one opposing player.
I have two opposing players, and number one was Reggie Bush. As a freshman, they split him out wide. He beat Derek Curry. God bless Derek Curry for his one-on-one matchup with Reggie Bush, by the way, on the perimeter, because that's some bad defensive schemes. And as he ran down the sideline, dove from the 5.5-yard line into the end zone, and I thought to myself, that's a future problem when Notre Dame plays USC these next couple of years, and indeed he was. Also, Desmond Howard had a really good day in Rick Meyer's first start, kind of the famous under-the-lights comeback win for Notre Dame the year before he won the Heisman. Desmond Howard was the best receiver on the field that day, too.
So I start to read this question, and the first sentence says, what was your experience in Notre Dame game that was off the radar and was precipitous of things to come? I don't know if it was off the radar, but the opener against Texas in 2016 was clearly was an indication of what was to come. And
we looked at each other like, why are they in a 3-pound front with a 250-pound quarterback?
And a 245-pound running back. I don't understand. You know, and some people thought that, like, I had some inside info that Brian Van Gorder was going to get fired. No, I just thought it was such a ridiculously bad game plan that he should be fired. I don't think I've ever said that about any other coordinator coming out of one single game, but, and it took four games to do it. But
his previous seasons contributed to your thoughts, too.
Yeah, that's true. But one player, okay, I said I'd get back to that Stanford game in 92, John Lynch.
Oh, wow. That's a
good one. Suffered a concussion in the first half of that game. Probably in today's game wouldn't be allowed to play in the second half, but he did. And he forced a fumble of Jerome Bettis early in the third quarter. And that was when Notre Dame they blew a 16-0 lead and gave up all 33 points in the second half. He had 9 tackles. He had an interception in the end zone of Rick Meyer. You know, he was, you're looking some of this stuff up. He was a second round baseball draft pick, and he wasn't sure that he was going to
play football. Wow.
Yeah, wow. He wasn't sure he was going to play football at Stanford, but and then he was a quarterback coming in, so he had to change position. So John Lynch is again, when I think of that question of who's the first name that popped out, and certainly Reggie Bush and guys like that. You know, I saw Tony Dorsett rush for 303 yards against Notre Dame, 303 yards, but John Lynch was the first one that popped in my head because that was a game that Notre Dame shouldn't have lost. Right. Maybe got out coached. Probably got out coached by Bill Walsh. I can't.
Oh no, they got out coached by Bill Walsh.
Well, that's why. But my point being, going up against Lou Holtz, I don't know how many times I've actually said that. But I think Bill Walsh helped coach them, and they certainly outplayed Notre Dame in the second half.
I want to remind people that will push back against what we just said. Stanford intercepted a throwback on a kickoff return by Notre Dame. That's scouting a team. Notre Dame was desperate. They tried to throw back on a kickoff return, and Stanford picked it off, landing inside the five-yard line. That's bad. Also, there's one more as a little kid. He might have been good by this point, but I don't think so as a freshman. A guy named Bernie Kosar destroyed Notre Dame, Tim Priester, when I was a 9-year-old. I was like, who is that? Why is he so good? And it turns out Bernie Kosar, he was a pretty good player.
We have a question from Irish94JRM. Would sliding Luke Telich to linebacker in 2027 address some of the depth questions without having to go to the portal, assuming Osbury returns, at that position group? Or is Telich at safety too valuable given the potential depth issues at that position group in 2027 as well? I thought this was a really good question.
Yeah. I think unless you can convince Tay Johnson or Don Shuler to somehow come back for another year, that he's probably too valuable at safety given what they're losing. I mean, I like Joey O'Brien, and I think Ethan Long has potential, but you still have a really experienced guy back there who does a lot of different things, and you can still involve him in other ways. But in my opinion, I think he, for his own personal future too, I think he probably would prefer to be in that hybrid role and still be doing safeties. I think that's probably where his, if he has an NFL future, where that would lie too. So
hybrid role would be great. That's ideal. If Pouncey would have started his career at safety as well, I would consider this more, but he clearly started his career at boundary corner. I only bring that up because I think Kerry Adams is going to at some point emerge as the boundary corner in the future. Doesn't mean Pouncey can't play somewhere else, but does Dallas Golden play full-time safety next year instead of nickel? Do they just go searching for nickel? Mm. Is Jaden Sanders your nickel? I think Talich might be a more impactful college linebacker than he would be a college safety. But Drew's point of having the veteran back there, I'm naming Joey O'Brien, Aiden Pouncey, and Ethan Long, who aren't going to be veterans going into next year, that's probably hard to overlook. Safety is a pretty important position to have a veteran leader on the back end. I think I love the idea of Talich up there. I've, for 30 years, liked moving safeties to fast linebacker. I think it works great in college football. And
yeah,
Drew Tranquil is definitely the number one guy that's ever done that at Notre Dame, safety to linebacker. He was the best, and he was way better than I thought he would be when he moved.
It didn't work in the one-year experiment with Harrison Smith.
No. He's also one of the best safeties over the last 20 years.
It's not true.
Could be the reason, but that's why. I don't think Drew Tranquil would be one of the best safeties of the last 20 years.
Yeah. This reminds me of the old expression. I don't know if anybody knows anymore, but you rob Peter to pay Paul if you take if you take Telich from safety to linebacker. And I do think he's a good football player, could be impactful at either spot. But it's hard to imagine that, 13, 14, 15, 16 games from now, Tay Johnson's already – probably going to be gone from Notre Dame. Don Shuler was already thinking about leaving Notre Dame after this past year.
Right. The thing with Tay Johnson, guys, is he's going to test great, and he's so much smarter at safety than instinctive at safety. There's I don't know what the downside is in the modern game of the NFL for him. I don't know why you wouldn't want him.
Yeah. I mean, if he has the kind of year that we anticipate him having, he's going to be one of the first safeties off the board.
Somebody asked me yesterday at the baseball fields. We're in Warsaw, Indiana, by the way, and hopefully he's listening. Will KVA, are they going to get a second linebacker in recruiting? It's like, yeah, I don't think so, but it all matters who comes back. You got to get Osbury back. And we talked about KVA. You want KVA to be the best linebacker in the country by November and December and January if you're Notre Dame and jump to the NFL. That's how Notre Dame's going to win a national title, not by having him working his way back through the season and saying, oh, he's going to be great next year for Notre Dame. You just want guys like Tay Johnson, KVA, Boubacar Traore is his last year. It will be his last year at Notre Dame. But those are the guys you just want to be absolutely so good that they
Even those transfer defensive tackles, if one of them ends up being an NFL draft pick, that's great for Notre Dame. And this is a year I'd probably, if I had to pick it now, be more optimistic about national championship hopes in 2026 and 2027 too. So why are you trying to save a KVA season for a year where you don't want to kick, you don't know what's going to happen in the future anyways, but why even kick it down the road for a year where maybe it doesn't line up as well, especially if you want CJ Carr to be the other one. It's great if he's a top 10 pick at quarterback this year.
I think we all feel good about Ethan Long being ready for a starting role in 2027. But who do you pair him up with if you lose Johnson, you lose Shuler, and you move Telich?
Hopefully, you know, O'Brien is
well. O'Brien's the number one choice there, yeah. And you know he showed some instincts. He's so thin. Remember, a couple times Tim, we're like, "Man, look how thin he is!" But he showed there were flashes, and we didn't get to see as much of the spring as we'd like. We did get to see two scrimmages, well, three really. You know, but he showed really good instincts in the spring at times when we had opportunities to see that. And so, will he be ready? Will he be physically ready? He may have to be. And Notre Dame may have to have a, you know, there may be a decision to make with Telich, but man, he's such a good safety.
Yeah. I just think
he has that ball hawk ability that, you know, similar to what Hamilton and Watts, not up to that level, but similar to that.
He might quickly, be. Go ahead, Drew.
I was just going to say, I just wanted to note too that for him to come back, he needs that 5-for-5 roll to pass too.
Right.
For this to actually be something Notre Dame would have to deliberate.
I really think O'Brien will be ready, and I think Notre Dame does because we live in the new world where they've paid him to be ready.
Yeah, too. No, I agree. I mean, he's going to get – you know, we're talking about next year, you know, what, 15 months from now?
Right.
He's going to be a lot bigger and stronger.
Our next question is from Big Brain on Brad. As Priester is fond of saying, no team is perfect at every position. So give me a few current imperfections that could actually become playoff – or BYU-Miami-SMU game weaknesses for the 2026 Irish. For instance, last year, something went wrong in games 1 and 2, no matter what reasons or qualifications we have for it. Something went wrong in game number 2 in 2024 and technically game 16. It's a good point that something goes wrong. So what are the imperfections you think that could kind of bleed in? There's many imperfections September 6th that would continue to bleed in.
Well, the greatest imperfection in the first 10 quarters of the season last year was the defense, because Chris Ash, just him and his players hadn't coalesced at that point. That's not going to happen now. So plus they're not going to play Miami and Texas A&M. So that won't be one of them. I'm going to let you guys chime in, because most of what, you know, is the receiving core as good as we anticipate? Will the Micah Gilberts of the world and Jaden Greathouse, will they actually step up and validate what we've speculated many times about this receiving core? But most of it is injury related. And the number one player you can't lose is CJ Carr. Otherwise you're playing a 17 or 18 year old that isn't ready to lead Notre Dame to a national title when the rest of the team is national title ready.
I think mine would be the running game. I mean, obviously you're losing two first round picks. I think you're losing those explosive plays and what they could do there. But then also say maybe you have two guys that are good at getting a little bit yards after contact and running through the tackles, but maybe Notre Dame also doesn't make the improvements they need to in short yardage and things like that too. And maybe the running game is more of a negative than it needs to be. And that puts a lot more on CJ Carr, who, for as great as he was last year, wasn't as good as maybe he always needed to be in some of Notre Dame's biggest games too. Like, his numbers definitely took a downturn. And we saw in USC, it's obviously a little different, but when they designed the defense to take him away, his numbers didn't do well. And obviously it was his first year. He kind of hit a wall and all those things are there too. And the running game didn't really need his help that day either. But there are some things that need to improve and show they can help him out so he can take the steps that I think he needs to take.
I don't have an imperfection realistically for the defense. I just think they should be very good. You could play good teams too. You don't have to. I'm talking BYU, SMU, Miami playoffs. The defense, everybody's going to get hurt. Relatively healthy, the defense does not have an imperfection that becomes a weakness. Other than CJ Carr, I could nitpick an imperfection that becomes a weakness against the likes of Miami and playoff teams for the whole offense. Just, they might not, their running game isn't going to be as good as last year. It's not. Their wide receivers might not be as good as, are the wide receivers as good as when you're going to play Ohio State, Texas, and Oregon, those type of teams? Are they that good that they beat those secondaries? I like Cooper Flanagan. Do you think Cooper Flanagan's better than Mitchell Evans and Michael Mayer and Cole Kmet? I don't think so. Like, we're all over the whole offense. The offensive line should be really good. It's not better than the 2020 group. 2020 group couldn't win the playoffs. Not better than the 20, you know, it's not better than the 2017 group. They couldn't block Georgia. I just think I could go through the whole offense. CJ Carr, we'd have to nitpick to say he's not going to be, but the guy behind him, like you said, Priester, there's an imperfection at quarterback. And the funny thing is, I think they'll score more than they did last year. It's just because of the schedule, though. When you play the playoff games, I can nitpick the whole offense. I can't nitpick the defense. The defense will go match up against Texas, Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon, and absolutely still be better than the offense of those teams. I don't know if Notre Dame's offense will be better than the defense of those teams.
Noah Grubbs and Teddy Girard, we haven't seen Teddy Girard in person at Notre Dame wearing a Notre Dame uniform, and Noah Grubbs impressed in the spring. It's not that we don't think they'll be good quarterbacks, but, you know, I mean, when you consider the surrounding cast they have on offense and defense, you just want somebody that has, you know, some experience playing this, and that would be difficult. Now, I don't even want to talk about something happening in Carr, but that would be the main thing for me, Tim. My point being, defensively, I agree with you. I mean, depth wise across the board, you wouldn't want to lose Anthony Knapp because he's the leader of that offensive line. And I think we were talking about off the air, right, Tim? I think Gerby Lambert, I mean, he's going to be more physical than they were at right tackle. Mm-hmm. Maybe we said on air Emil Wagner was. So, yeah,
I think the best way to look at CJ Carr and Girard or Grubbs, and even if it's Hebert, when's there been a bigger drop off at starting quarterback to backup quarterback at Notre Dame than CJ Carr to whoever his backup is this year? Because it wasn't Riley Leonard to Steve Angeli. It wasn't Sam Hartman to Steve Angeli. 2022, there was no drop off. It was just Buckner and Pine. there was a mistake right there. 2021, I mean, at one point, freshman Tyler Buckner looked like the guy until Cone got some blocking, right? At Virginia Tech.
I think a big segment of the fan base wanted Jack Cone on the bench.
I guess we got to go back to like the book era because they didn't recruit quarterbacks. So that would be the only time. But like this, they weren't going to win the book era would be the last time. But that's still not CJ Carr to Teddy Girard or Noah Grubbs because Carr's better.
Yeah. Was Ian Buck and was his backup in 2020? Was it Drew Pine though?
It was Pine would be his backup in 2020. Yeah. But CJ Carr is so far ahead of Ian Book that I think that gets right back down to what you're looking at. Like, I think these guys are like Drew Pine, but.
Well, I'm wondering if Drew Pine as a freshman is worst case scenario than having one of these three guys potentially hit is still a decent amount better, but you're probably right.
That's probably true. Yeah. Drew Pine is a true freshman, although he would have had time to throw. That was a good defense. All right. I did not want to end with that because we went negative. See how that works nowadays, guys? I massage it and move something in here. This one from JJ Post, friend of the show, friend of Drew Mentok. Final question. If my memory is correct, O'Malley was the day one conductor of the Aeneas Williams train. You are correct. Who are some other favorite guys for the rest of the crew? We're all in on day one, and I'd like it to be before they played it down for Notre Dame.
Go ahead, Drew.
I remember, talking to Jeremiah Love right before he got on campus and him being a kid who had like a 4.4 GPA in high school and him just being like, I don't really care that much if I play as a freshman. And just like, I want to preserve my reps for the NFL and being like, this is either the ideal like blue chip guy to bring in behind Audric Estime, or this is going to be a disaster and you don't care about football. And I just was like, one way or the other, he's going to be great or terrible. And so I don't know if I was on his bandwagon. The other one I'll name is Luke Talich. I think just kind of the story, him having offers from like good programs, like Utah, he was 6'4", ran a 10.73 in the 100 meter dash in high school. So he had the athleticism. He also happens to go to the same high school my dad went to in Wyoming. So my dad would always provide me updates because they won a bunch of like state championships. And there's not a lot of players. I think the last player previously from Wyoming at Notre Dame was in like the 1970s. So I just happened to have some familiarity with him and probably was rooting for the story a little bit just because, what are the odds that the 10,000 person town Cody, Wyoming produces a Notre Dame football player? And it did.
I thought it was when Notre Dame got Audric Estime to decommit from Michigan State and to come to Notre Dame. I was really, really excited about that. I loved what he showed. I thought he was Jerome Bettis like, and he was Jerome Bettis like as far as productivity, not taking the game to the next level. I think we all like CJ Carr, but until we saw him at Notre Dame and saw him do some of the things that he was capable of, then we knew, okay, this guy's going to be, this guy's going to be really big time. I was trying to think of a three-star. Howard Cross III was a three-star that I was definitely really excited about. When he was healthy, he was about as good as it gets for a Notre Dame interior defensive lineman.
For the, and you're going to agree with this one, for the good guy that ended up being good before he ever came to Notre Dame, was I could not believe what I turned on Jeremiah Owusu-Koroboa's film the first time. I was like, this is the most underrated guy. This is the most underrated guy I've ever seen on film. And then the same class, I was wrong. I really liked Jafar Armstrong. Yeah. I really liked Jafar Armstrong. I thought he was going to be very good. And as a person, he was a ideal fit too. So when you kind of talk to him and stuff like that, you're like, God, this can't miss. And I do think his stomach laceration robbed him of some explosiveness along the way, but obviously he wouldn't have been as good as I thought he was going to be. Okay. Owusu-Koroboa.
Oh yeah. No, I thought his high school film, I thought was,
it looked like Stonebreaker with his instincts.
It was incredibly revealing. Now some guys that, can we flip it around, guys, that we didn't like? I didn't think Gunnar Kiel. I said all along Gunnar Kiel wasn't a 5-star quarterback.
Oh, I do remember that.
Small town Indiana, although Jack Kaiser blew that out of the water for me. Jordan Johnson.
Yeah.
I think we all rated him.
We all had Xavier Watts ahead of Jordan Johnson as a wide receiver, the whole staff.
Yeah. I think I had, when we ranked him, I think I had Jordan Johnson 7th in the class, and I caught heat for that. Mm-hmm. I just didn't see the level of consistency.
Yeah, I'm too high.
Exactly. Right.
Oh, I know a really good one. Nice guy. But Steve Filer.
Oh, Steve Filer.
He does not know what he's doing.
I did actually write that down. That's a 2008 class. That was a guy I kept telling people, guys, he's not. What about Steve Filer? Nothing against Steve Filer. I just didn't think that the film showed, nor his arrival at Notre Dame, it didn't show that he was going to be able to play up to the level that the expectation was.
Yeah, really good athlete, man without a position in football. I do remember Brian Kelly gave a good indication that he was not high on Steve Filer when for some reason we asked him about him and he mentioned him riding to practice on a skateboard. When you throw in some superfluous information like that, I don't think the coach likes it. It's like somebody, Aiden K and I, Al Washington once mentioned something about surfing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got by. Like, I don't think that means he was fond of him doing it. Brian Kelly with Drew White with the spring break skiing. You have to decide if you want to go skiing on spring break or not. Like, that was just thrown out there out of nowhere. He was wrong about Drew White, but he was right about Steve Fox.
Yeah. You know, I was going through the classes. Do you know where Manti Te'o was ranked in the class of 2009 at Notre Dame? In the pecking order?
You mean at Notre Dame, in Notre Dame's class?
Yeah.
Well, I would. It's a trick question now, but I would have guessed one. But it can't be. So, look it up. Who was ahead of Manti? I'll look it up right now because I want to argue with
somebody. Go ahead. All right, this is good. It's good radio.
What in the world? How in the world?
He's 10th. He was 10th.
Has to be out of order. This can't be right.
Alex Bullard was the number one recruit in that
this
class.
Can't be, I think this listing is wrong. There's no way this is. I just think they messed it up. This has to be something went wrong with our system. Because Robbie Toma's ahead of him.
Exactly. Yeah. Jake Golick, who had injuries, he's ahead of him.
All right, I'm clicking on this. I'm going to change this to composite and see if it puts it back in.
He was the 4th overall player in that class.
Manti was number one. Let's see how they did. Now we're going to run it down a rabbit hole here. Manti number one. Chris Watt, number two. Good job. Sierra Wood, number three. Jack Evans, number four. My greatest Brian Kelly story ever. Tyler Stockton, who we all love. Going to be a great coach. Number five. They messed that one up. Zeke Mata, six. Zach Martin, seven. Right ahead of EJ Banks. All right. Well,
sometimes it's hard to tell with an offensive lineman.
It can be hard to tell. Lowest ranked. God, they had a lot of kickers in this class. Lowest ranked non-kicker, Robbie Toma. Good player. Second lowest, Jake Golick, which, you know, a little bit of a legacy recruit. Tyler Eifert, third lowest ranked non.
Yeah. Well, and I can remember my film review on him. It's like, he played wide receiver in high school, and I knew they were going to transition him to tight end. And so I didn't know exactly, you know, how that would work out. I was definitely bullish on JD Bertrand. And then after he came to Notre Dame, I wasn't sure that was going to come to fruition until he got an opportunity. And then, you know, there's still people that say that JD Bertrand was slow. Okay. Not true.
No, he might be slower than like a KVA or something like that, but he's not slow in a straight line race. We know for a fact he's fast in a straight line race because Al Golden knows a lot about football and Notre Dame defense, by the way, guys, if you're listening, Al Golden said he became between his first and second year, I think he was going by film because he didn't coach him his first year. A guy that was just a fast linebacker to an actual linebacker. That means his number one trait at one point was speed, according to his linebacker coach. There you go. I hope you guys enjoyed this trip down 2009 memory lane as much as I did, because that was a fun way to end the podcast. 24/7 Sports and everybody else, you messed up on Tyler Eifert, but they did hit on Chris Watt. We'll be back Thursday, June 25th. Hopefully there'll be some Notre Dame commitment news to talk about. Until then, for Tim Priester and Drew Bentock, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thank you for watching and listening. Irish Illustrated Insider.